Chapter 34.
The Bethlehem dance is a very popular affair. The hospital teems with people who have all arrived by invitation and by the purchase of a ticket allowing admission. Some have come for the music and dancing, or out of a sense of charity, others for the curiosity of seeing the mad of Bedlam curtsying and bowing to one another, with the hopes that some strange, scandalous thing will occur, something they might repeat at this ball or that dinner. Indeed, two ladies watch discreetly as a nurse coaxes a tattered doll from the fierce grip of a patient, soothing the old woman with assurances that her little girl will be best served by a good night's rest in the nursery.
"Poor dear," the ladies murmur, and "breaks the heart,"
though I can tell from the light in their eyes that they've gotten a taste of what they've come for, a peek behind the curtain at despair, horror, and hopelessness, so that they may be happy to close it again and keep its taint far from the safe borders of their well-tended lives. I wish for them a long dance with Mr. Snow. The dance is well underway by the time I spy Felicity and Anne inching toward me through the throng. Mrs. Worthington has come as chaperone, but she's otherwise engaged, talking to the hospital's physician superintendent, Dr. Percy Smith.
"Gemma! Oh, what happened here?" Felicity says, seeing my blood-stained glove.
"Nell Hawkins bit me."
"How awful," Anne says.
"Miss McCleady's been here already today. Nell's in a very distressed state, but she knows where to find the temple, and tonight she's going to reveal it."
"If she proves reliable," Anne says.
"Yes," I admit. "If." Tom's suddenly beside me. He fiddles nervously with his tie.
"I think it's proceeding rather well, don't you?"
"It is the best dance I've ever attended," Anne says. It is the only dance she's ever attended, but now hardly seems the time to mention it.
"I do hope tonight's performance is satisfactory,"
Tom says, looking in Dr. Smith's direction.
"I've had some of the patients prepare a small program of entertainment for this evening."
"I'm certain it will be a delight to all," Anne says, as if it were a matter of grave importance.
"Thank you, Miss Bradshaw. You are exceedingly kind."
Tom offers a genuine smile.
"Not at all," Anne says, before staring longingly at the dance floor.
Felicity pinches me lightly. She coughs delicately into her handkerchief, but I know she's trying desperately not to laugh at this forlorn exchange.
"Come on, Tom," I beg him silently. "Ask her to dance."
Tom gives her a bow.
"I trust you will have a pleasant evening," he says, excusing himself.
Anne's face registers disappointment and then shock.
"She's here," she whispers.
"Who?" Anne opens her fan wide. From behind its protection, she points to the far side of the room. I see only Mr. Snow waltzing with the laughing Mrs. Summers, but then my eyes find something familiar. I do not recognize her straight away in her pale lavender dress and exposed neck. It is Miss McCleady. She has come.
"What should we do?"
Felicity asks. Remembering Miss Moore's letter, I say, "We must keep her away from Nell at all costs." The orchestra has stopped its playing, and the lamps are dimmed to a cosy glow. People abandon the dance floor in pairs, moving to the sides of the room. Tom takes his place in the centre. He goes to run his fingers through his hair, a nervous habit, and, remembering his gloves and the pomade, thinks better of it. There is an excessive clearing of the throat. I'm anxious for him. At last he finds his voice.
"Ladies and gentlemen, if I may have your attention. Thank you for coming out on such a cold night. In gratitude, the Bethlehem Royal Players have prepared a small performance for you. And now, I give you the Bethlehem Royal Players."
Having acquitted himself well, Tom exits to polite applause. I find that I have lost Miss McCleady in the crowd. A cold dread crawls slowly up my spine. "I've lost Miss McCleady," I whisper to Felicity. "Do you see her?" Felicity cranes her neck.
"No. Where are you off to?"
"To look for her," I say, slipping into the cover of the crowd. As Mrs. Summers plunks out a tune at the piano, I move quiet as fog through the room, searching for Miss McCleady. Mrs. Summers' playing is somewhat painful to hear, but the crowd claps for her anyway.
She stands uncertainly afterward, bowing and smiling, her hand covering her mouth. When she begins to tear at her hair, Tom bids her gently to sit. The eerie Mr. Snow delivers a soliloquy from Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale. He has a voice trained for the stage and would be impressive if I could forget his performance for me earlier in the evening. I've gotten through half the crowd, but I haven't spied Miss McCleavy again.